Strategy and Insider, exploring future trends and their impacts.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Strategy and Insider podcast. I'm very happy to be with two really remarkable entrepreneurs who are turning vision into reality out of Geneva. The vision is a digital tool that analyzes our voice alone to reveal the first signs of fatal diseases, burnout, or cognitive decline before any traditional test could actually detect that. And the reality is that the technology already exists and is being applied by major players such as Microsoft. So the question is, are we ready to discover what our voice says about our health? And without further ado, let's dive into it. And a very warm welcome to Lara Chavez and Eduardo Giudice, who are the two co-founders of Virtuosis AI. Lara and Eduardo are the really driving forces behind this company, which is a spin-off from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, EPFL, in Lausanne. Lara herself is a French-Moroccan descent and studied microengineering as well as robotics and data science at EPFL. Her passion for health stems from her career as a former professional athlete, while her fascination with artificial intelligence drives her entrepreneurial vision. And in that sense, she set out to build an AI tool that enhances human connection, collaboration, but also health, while keeping people firmly at the center rather than replacing them with machines. And back in 2020, she co-founded her startup Virtuosis AI together with Eduardo, who himself is a Swiss-Italian entrepreneur with a proven track record of scaling tech ventures. He's a graduate of Bocconi University in Milan, HEC Paris, and Rotterdam School of Management, and does hold expertise in economics as well as international management. His career actually includes roles at the French energy company Total and major bank BNP Paribas. He's also an ambassador of the Geneva Chamber of Commerce, Industry and Services, and also what I learned at Dedicated Yomi. So together, Lara and Eduardo represent to me the ideal blend of research excellence as well as entrepreneurial execution. And with that said, it's truly a privilege to have both of you with me today. And again, a very warm welcome, Lara and Eduardo.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you, Thomas. It's great to see you again.
So, Lara, your journey spans professional athletics, advanced engineering, and data science studies, as well as founding an AI startup that has already been recognized by the LEC Palace, Microsoft, and also others. You achieved all of this while still in your 20s. So looking back, what was there as a defining moment, perhaps in your athletic career or early research or whatever, where you realized that you really wanted to start your own business eventually? And did you ever kind of contemplate going in another direction since then? Maybe, I don't know, enjoying the perks of a corporate job?
Yeah, so it can be very attractive indeed to enjoy the perks of the corporate job, especially when you are in Switzerland, where the trade-off between the cost of the life when you are an entrepreneur compared to having kind of a well-paid job. Maybe it's not an easy decision for everyone, but for me, even before I arrived in Switzerland, which was 10 years ago, I was reading, you know, as a kid, there are these little magazines about science. And I was reading one named Science et Vie, where EPFL was mentioned a lot about not only the research, but also some spin-off. And that's how I think I initially got interested into startups. And then eventually, as soon as I started university, I joined a startup competition with friends, and we tried building an app and the business model, and I really loved it. And also on the side of my studies, I would do some consulting business and different jobs, not the typical job you would do as a just as a teacher, or but more like building my own consultancy and developing apps, later some data science project. And so I think naturally I got attracted to building my own project. And so I did try the corporate experience just because I wanted to kind of leave it to see how it is. And so I worked for biotech synthesizing DNA. Just digital data on it in the US. I was with a really nice team and I really liked it. But after a couple of months, I really realized I want to have the ownership of my project and really be driven by it. But also at the same time, I got exposed to that US mentality in Silicon Valley. And so that's how then I started working on a startup, then another one. In both cases, I wasn't passionate enough about what I was working on. But eventually, a bit before COVID, I had to decide on my thesis subject for right after the master. And so I started looking into, okay, how can we make tangible something that is not that tangible, especially for engineer, which is our mental state, our mental well-being. Mm-hmm. How can we analyze that with AI? And that's how everything started. And since then, I never thought about, even when it was hard, I never thought about going back to a corporate job.
And as we were mentioning, kind of the starting point, you both have quite a multicultural and also international background. Where and how did you first meet, the two of you, and how did the idea to co-found Virtuosis AI come about?
I would use the word serendipity, which is a magic word in the sense it was really by pure azart, like the life. We met really kind of randomly. And Lara told me, I was exploring at that time different technology related to the EPFL, the Swiss Fair Digital Technology, which is an amazing place to have an idea about what innovation is. And when Lara told me about the power of the voice and the AI at that time, I would like to stress the fact that ChatGPT was not issued, released yet. And what really impressed me was that just with some acoustic and some mathematics, you could spot so many things. Technology was not there yet, but was firmly convinced that with a few more research and a few more trials, we could really build something out of it. I saw immediately Lara, her entrepreneurial spirit and soul. And that's basically the things they evolved naturally. And I didn't want to let her do it herself. And then we decided to join the forces in this amazing adventure.
So I really need to also watch out what I'm saying and how I'm saying this today, because you have the potential to also analyze my voice. I just recognized myself. But that said, Eduardo, you really bring credentials from three of the most prestigious business schools, Bocconi in Milan, HEC in Paris, and obviously also the Rotterdam School of Management, as well as a background in scaling tech ventures beforehand. Among the various projects you are involved in and have been involved in, would you say Virtuosis AI is the most ambitious one and also the one with the greatest potential? But if so, what makes you believe that this is the venture worth betting on? Because you said when you heard first about the idea that Lara shared, you were intrigued of getting behind this and doing this jointly.
Absolutely. It's definitely the one which is the most ambitious because of different factors. First of all, AI is now so fast compared to any other technology we see. I would say a cycle of 3 months in AI is probably comparable to 3 years in other technological sectors. It's ambitious because what we try to solve, the problem is really a worldwide issues. It's like improving the health of billions of people. And I think this, nothing else can be more ambitious than improving the life, identified condition, health condition, diseases as early as possible. And saving lives, it's probably one of the most ambitious and also, I would say, purpose-driven goal in life. In terms of why I believe that this is really a company and a technology worth working so hard is because of the unicity of what we are doing. Its unicity enabled us to be really one, in my humble opinion, one of the future leading tech company in the world. We are building models, acoustic models related to health condition, similarly to large companies like OpenAI are doing in the large language models. Mm-hmm. And for me, betting on this technology, given the potentials, is betting on the future and hope of humanity. I know it sounds maybe very visionary. I try to be humble because we are a relatively small team and we are still at the initial part of the journey. But I really believe that we can create something huge and with a lot of impact on the whole world.
And I like the way you position it, and still we come to, at a later point in time, that you're really kind of also already very well recognized, despite you being still a young firm. But before jumping there, probably touching a bit on the core technology of your company that analyzes our voice as a biomarker, capturing acoustic features such as tone, intonation, and also speech rhythm to derive insights about a person's health, but also emotional state. Probably for our listeners who may be less familiar with the science, and probably Lara, also a question to you, could you walk us through how voice biomarkers work and what they can already reliably tell us today, where their current limitations are, and why is our voice such a rich source of health information compared to other biological signals?
Yeah, so it often surprises people when I tell them that from a 30-second audio recording of the voice, we can assess up to 25 health conditions. But it actually a field of research that was born decades ago. So actually the first publication on detecting Parkinson from a voice recording dates from the 80s. But the performance that were achieved were a bit plateauing until recently, when actually COVID and the funding to find alternative way of detecting early signs of COVID, there is a lot of funding that went into AI models. And then as it's more obvious than respiratory disorders affect voice, it's more obvious that we can hear it from a voice recording. And so a lot of university research teams started getting funding to do research in that. And it also had consequences on the research on other health condition as through voice analysis. And so why it works? Basically, from the moment there is one of the organs involved in speech production, so that is the brain, the lungs, where we have air that comes into our lungs. And then when we expel that air going through the vocal folds and all the larynx, that produce sounds. And so if you have the brain, the lungs, the larynx, or the facial or the tongue muscles that are impaired, then it would also impact how your voice sounds. And even if it's barely, the changes are barely audible to the human ear, and AI models can easily pick them up. And so conditions that impacts one of these organs, it's neurodegenerative disorders like Parkinson and Alzheimer's. It's mental health like depression, anxiety disorders. It's also respiratory disorders, but also more surprisingly, some cardiometabolic disorders. Mm-hmm. Some that are related to chronic heart failure, type 2 diabetes also. And there you have either inflammation, changing the rigidity of the vocal cord, or some other aspect in the physiology that changes and impacts the sounds of the voice. And so we analyze all this acoustic feature. You mentioned some of them like intonation, tone, speech rhythm. There are hundreds of characteristics in the voice that we can process multiple times per second, every second. And from this acoustic feature, there is a model which has been trained on healthy controls and people with this conditions. So it learns the pattern that is specific, like a signature of a given health condition. And then where we try to be really strong is making sure such models work also on people who have comorbidities, because I just mentioned that type 2 diabetes impacts the voice. So what if someone who has type 2 diabetes then suffers from depression? Will we be able to pick up depression or only in someone who is healthy? policy. So that's the kind of things we try to be careful with, and it tend to work pretty well.
And can I just ask, how much recorded voice do you need for detecting this? Is this something where we talk hours and weeks, or is this sometimes easily detectable, depending obviously on the condition to be detected? But can you share that?
So we need just 30 seconds of speech. And the most important is that it's as natural as possible. So the ideal case is when we pick that voice sample in the background of a discussion. So it can be a teleconsultation. It can be a phone conversation between two people who consent to it. And that's where we get the best results. We can also, it can also be done with a self-test where you would just talk to your phone, tell about how, like what you did your previous day or during your holidays. Like the content of what the person says doesn't matter at all. It's just important that it's natural and fluent. So like in the mother tongue, for example, ideally.
Well, that's super interesting. And if you detect the disease, I mean, with which kind of specificity can you detect this diseases?
So it varies, of course, by health condition. There are some that are easier to detect, like Parkinson, where we can detect it actually years before the tremor, because the tremors is only, it corresponds only to one acoustic characteristics. But then there are other ones that vary and they are more subtle, but we can pick them up. And in some studies, it has been proven that it can be detected up to 7 years before the first tremors through such models, through voice analysis. And in terms of specificity sensitivity, so in Parkinson, we would be around 98%, 96%, so sensitivity, specificity. But then for other condition like in mental health, so depression, anxiety. So for example, in depression, we would be at 77%, 83% sensitivity, specificity. So it's lower. And then most of the health condition fall within that range in terms of performance as of today. And over time, we are trying to make sure not just to improve that raw performance, but really make sure it generalizes well across languages. Because even if we don't analyze languages, it still affects a bit the acoustic, especially between tonal and non-tonal languages. So this like between Chinese, which is tonal languages, and our German, French, Italian, etc., which are non-tonal. And there we make sure it works as well, regardless of the accent and the language of the person.
Oh, super fascinating and very intriguing. And I'm impressed by the 30 seconds that you already need and also the high level of accuracy that you're achieving. Let's probably dive into a bit of a different area, because for your AI tool, language and content are not as important as the underlying information they actually carry. And that's that some languages must be easier to analyze than others due to its phonetic structure or also cultural communication styles. Or is there no greater difference that you're perceiving? And with this, what are some of the technological, but also logistical barriers that exist in making the technology available, let's say, in all languages around the world?
What I like about our technology is that it's really universal. We, since the very beginning, we focused on the paraverbal. No need to understand what people say, which also increases the privacy of our technology. The fact of being paraverbal, it makes it universal. We can definitely identify some cultural communication styles, which may diverge the performance of our models. That's why we prefer people, as Lara mentioned before, we prefer people to speak in their mother tongue in order to avoid any stress during the conversation. But at the same time, we can maybe, since we have also some audience in the German-speaking countries, there is a nuance and there is kind of funny story that we deployed some of our algorithm with Swiss German, and Swiss German had a specific pattern. I myself, unfortunately, don't speak German, but actually I can recognize the pattern of some Swiss German dialects. and they differ from the what they call a high German. And initially, our algorithm was performing less well with that dialect. But then we trained, we used more recordings of Swiss Germans, and everything was absolutely with the normal standards. That's the funny story about it. But generally, it performs in Chinese, Arabics, Japanese, Spanish. So it's really, really beautiful to see that this technology doesn't have any barriers regards to languages and genders as well.
It's all about having models that have been trained and evaluated on diverse data. And of course, age impacts the voice, gender impacts it, and language, as we just discussed.
And one of your most compelling use cases is the early detection of Parkinson's disease through AI-powered voice analysis, which was developed in collaboration with the Canadian Research Institute Savoie-Morfort and the University of Ottawa. So actually, Parkinson's is notoriously difficult to diagnose early, particularly because its initial symptoms are really subtle and often missed during routine primary care visits. How significant could AI-driven voice analysis be in closing this diagnostic gap, which is really a problem? And what does the evidence gathered so far tell us about the accuracy and but also the reliability of this approach?
Yes, so for Parkinson, it's one of these health conditions where there are no like single biomarker that you could just measure. So traditionally, you would see how the person walks. So ideally, you would be in person with them and ask them to walk some specific exercise and see their motor control. And that would be impaired already when the disease has progressed a bit. Then you would also ask a bit of questions about how the person sleeps, etc. But then a lot of the symptoms overlaps with other health condition, which makes it quite hard to diagnose. In terms of the voice, so we pick up the tremors, but we pick up also other impairments, such as there is one acoustic parameter, which is named performance. And in particular, the second one, it's affected by how you move the back part of your tongue. And so these tend to be impaired already before the person has tremors. So that's just one single characteristics. But when we combine all the really, really, really small change, and when I'm telling about changes, it's not compared to a reference of the same person, but it's a change compared to the norm. Think about, for example, when you check your cholesterol, like there is a norm that is valid for all humans. And then you can be like outside of that norm and along with other characteristic in your other markers in your blood or else you can check and make sure you are healthy or maybe less. And so the same way with the voice, we can check independent acoustic characteristics. So like that second performance and be like, okay, it's outside of the norm. So it's to be looked at. So that's something that is very explainable. But then on the model that predicts whether the person has Parkinson or not, with a certain probability, it takes into account all this like hundreds of parameters to make that prediction. And it can be really, really small deviation from the norm in many parameters. But then it would tell us, okay, this person may have Parkinson and help us detect it early. And actually, we have hospitals, but also biotech reaching out to us because they figured out voice is very likely to be the most sensitive biomarker we have for Parkinson, especially if we want to detect it or monitor it remotely, where we cannot have a doctor in person assessing how the person walks in addition to a long interview, but just with a 30 second to see not just if the person has Parkinson or not, but if they are getting better with a medication, for example.
And as you mentioned, also kind of the stakeholders in the healthcare system, like neurologists, psychologists, and others, how do they react to it? Are they already kind of working with it? Are they interested in learning more? Are they somewhat more hesitant because this might be a challenge for them going forward? How is that perceived? If you can share anything, that would be super helpful to understand.
So there was a significant change about, I'd say, 1 year and a half ago. So that was late 2024, I'd say, where it went from a technology that maybe wasn't super understood, was like nice to have, to something a lot of people and a lot of healthcare professionals get interested into, most likely as everyone started to be aware of the potential of AI. And so we have a really good perception from doctors. My personal hypothesis is that in the past, a lot of the AI in diagnostic was around radiology, where mm-hmm. it would tend to replace radiologists. And so then there was a conflict and not a good perception. But in the case of voice biomarker, it's really a tool to support clinical decision, clinical reasoning. I mean, if it's your job to diagnose and then also help with treatment a patient, then you have an additional tool to get more information to treat better your patients. And so they really love it. And they tend to look not only at the score, okay, does the patient have Parkinson or not, but actually the doctors that use our solution, they love to deep dive into the acoustic markers that provide explainability, but also sometimes they use it to do differential diagnostic. So we have a really good perception. And in terms of the patients, so they tend to be willing that their GP or that their neurologist use the tool and interpret the information along with the other information they have to make a better decision. So it's really positive on that side.
Cool. And thanks for sharing this, because that only if the surrounding stakeholders actually work with it, then you can make it into reality in the end, right? And probably pivoting a bit away beyond Parkinson's and kind of diseases that we touched about until here. Your company is also tackling another major societal challenge, which is the psychological well-being and mental health. So luckily enough, you integrated your solution into Microsoft Teams, and it was actually a significant milestone that resulted in your recognition as Microsoft Switzerland Startup of the Year back in 2023. And embedding a health and well-being monitoring tool into a workplace platform may create a powerful opportunity for early detection of stress, anxiety, or burnout, but it may also raise important ethical questions around how do you ensure that employees feel supported through probably a primary channel for preventative health interventions rather than being watched or surveyed by the employer.
That's absolutely an important aspect of this technology. We have to, first of all, thanks to Microsoft for the support we received, and because we work together for bringing our technology to their customers. Especially at that time, since it was 2023, people were less used to AI tools, and we had to explain a lot what was about our technology and what were the real implications with regards to a deployment in a corporate environment. So we decided since the very beginning to conceive our product with the principle of privacy by design. That means that each user of Microsoft Teams, which wants to activate our technology during his calls, has to accept the fact of having our tool analyzing the call and always have the opt-out option. So say that he can activate, deactivate. This was the first fourth condition. Second mm-hmm. condition that we implemented was that employers cannot get access to the individual result of the assessment, but only the aggregated data. Mm-hmm. And the third one was that the employees have full control on his journey and access to real useful insights and access to any benefits, any support that the company provides to him or to her. So these were basically the three way to tackle these important ethical questions. We ensure that our technology provides intervention before first symptoms appear, and that the user and the employee can enter a care pathway as soon as possible.
So maybe to add on that, the beauty of the technology is that you don't need to do a specific test for it, because usually you would test for like do a blood test or do some kind of specific test if you already have doubts, like imaging also, if you have doubts that you have a given issue with your health. In the case of voice, because it can be analyzed in the background of existing conversation and from the same voice sample, all the health condition can be analyzed. I mean, the one that can be detected from voice. Then you can screen really in the preventative manner instead of waiting to do it once the person consults because they realize they had some symptoms and some health issues.
And moving probably beyond the clinical and the workplace applications, could you also envisage a future where individuals, so customers, consumers, routinely monitor their own voice biomarkers through, let's say, a smartphone app or any sort of smart home application, similar to how people track steps or heart rate today? And what would need to happen for that to be kind of both clinically meaningful, at the same time, not anxiety-inducing into people?
That has always been my dream, to be frank, since the very beginning, although there were many challenges to enable that. Myself, I've always been using trackers. I've been doing my DNA sequencing. I like to experiment all kind of technology on myself, provided an unobtrusive. What I would like to quote in order to ensure that this change happens is a sentence from Steve Jobs. It's the fact that a technology has to be magic to ensure that it goes beyond either the practitioner, clinicians, or the corporate sector. I would say that our technology is magic. we are almost there. But I think what needs to be changed is probably the mindset of people. And I think there is really a change I perceive across the population. The younger generations are more, they're willing to adapt these new technologies. And also regarding policymakers and decision makers, I've seen at your amazing event we participated last year in Frankfurt, that you don't see any more silos like practitioners, hospital, insurance providers, corporates, consumer goods producers. Now there is a convergence of the health well-being. And I think when you have this convergence in across different stakeholders and decision maker, together with the open mindset of the younger generation, but also late generation, I would say also, we work a lot with what is called the silver economy. And we see there is more and more people are embracing the new technology. So I think if we have the right policy in place preserving privacy, if we, to some extent, policymakers push some regulation, of course, we don't want to overregulate it, but some regulation, which we do have in Europe, actually.
What is important, fully in line with what Eduardo just mentioned, and then what is important is to have the support if something is detected. So it's really having the complete, everything connected. So yeah. Where you can have that voice check, ideally outside of the care pathway, so it's really preventative, and that this checkup is connected to the intervention. So, for example, what if we detect if someone, for example, potentially suffers from depression? It's important to have then kind of the solution, the support that is already there and easily accessible to the individual. So having all the ecosystem connected together from policy, insurance, doctors, and kind of intervention.
And I love the fact that you bring up that convergence of industries, or the fusion even of industry sectors around one of the most decisive elements in life, which is our health, our well-being, right? And I'm a firm believer that healthcare in future is going to be much more entrenched into our 24/7 life and not merely only happening at a doctor's place where we are not spending even an hour and a half or two per year globally as a person with a doctor. Yeah, this is at max and at best where some bug fixing takes place, but healthcare needs to be happening at home, at work, on our way to work. So we much more need to discuss what Eduardo and Lara, you just mentioned. How can we find subtle ways to ensure that we entrench into healthy living, healthy mobility, and subtly gather data to help prolong life and then even make life better, obviously, for individuals? And in order to be in such a position, it is of utmost importance, obviously, that this is something trustworthy. Yeah? And that trust element is closely also linked to regulation and regulatory approval. And as such, this is one of the most substantial hurdles at the same time for any digital health or AI-based diagnostic solution. Any medical-grade AI product must navigate complex frameworks, supranational regulations like those in the EU, at the same time, country-specific rules in Switzerland and elsewhere. Where does Virtuosis AI currently stand on the regulatory pathway? Can you share anything there?
Yeah, so it's for us, it's the least exciting part, but I think it's very important that there are these regulatory approvals that are required so anyone can kind of trust the healthcare solution that are proposed to them without necessarily having to deep dive in all the research background behind a given therapy, diagnostic solution or else. And so their Virtuosis initially launched as a wellness solution. So we could immediately offer our technology using a vocabulary that is non-medical. So, for example, framing, instead of having a depression model, for example, framing it as mood. So that's how we launched initially in January 2023. But over a year ago, so in early 2025, we went through the process of getting certified as a medical device with the CE marking. So for Europe. So it can be used in healthcare settings with actually the true names of what we detect and also beyond mental health. And so that allows today doctors to use it, for example, during the teleconsultation and to have actually the insight about the probabilities displayed with the models, whether it's an Alzheimer's, Parkinson, depression, diabetes or other models. And in Switzerland, we had to register with Swissmedics, for example. But I'd say the most strict regulation is the CE marking that we require. And it's stricter for what we do. It's stricter in Europe compared to the US, for example. So now that we have passed this kind of regulatory hurdle in Europe, we can also easily be available in the US. And then for us further, let's say, compliance regulatory processes are required only in order to be approved as a standard diagnostic tool without having the need to do further testing. Today, it's a clinical decision support tool. So it's a kind of early warning system. And then you would do the gold standard test for the
confirmatory test.
Blood test imaging, etc. But if we were to be a diagnostic tool, then we would even need to go further, which could happen later on, but not yet today, especially given the fact that regulation on software as a medical device, especially when it's based on AI models, it's still not fully ready and fully defined the rules.
And one of the common critiques of Europe is that the continent, our continent, is falling behind in developing proprietary technologies, especially in AI. And you're actually successfully proving quite the opposite with your company. How do you assess the startup landscape here compared to other regions like the US or China? And what do you perceive are kind of specific advantages, but also disadvantages to building a health tech AI company in Switzerland, maybe also with regard to its position outside the European Union?
Absolutely. That's a great question. In my opinion, Europe has been doing quite a lot in the recent years. We also work a lot with France. I would say there is some vision to compete to some extent with the USA giants. We definitely have to be concrete and pragmatic. So here in Europe, we have excellent research center, but we are less keen to take risk. So I think that's I would say, the main challenge, I would say, of European versus American. You mentioned also, I think, Asia and China. I don't know enough about that. I'm keen to explore more further this market. At the same time, I would say that we really have, especially in Switzerland, but in several other countries, but especially in Switzerland, we have a very strong research center where Lara made studies and research like EPFL, and we also have the ETH in Zurich, where you can really see, I will invite people to go some fair events and see how many new technologies are coming up from these research labs. So I think we have really, the strength is that we have really strong R&D, strong reputation as well. I would say Switzerland, when you go, you travel across the world, you go to Middle East, you go even to the USA, Switzerland is really taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And so I think there is a definite advantage to be in Switzerland and developed models like we do. At the same time, the challenges are more on the fragmentation of the market. So once you quit the R&D stage and you want to go to market, the market is fragmented. Mm-hmm. You have different languages, different regulation. Lara mentioned it earlier, which I would say create a real burner for startups. And that's something which should really focus, I think, in terms of policymakers. But it's very difficult because policies are written words, and mindset is it's something that needs to be changed. But I'm very positive personally because I see there is a lot of change in the younger generations compared to myself when I finished the studies already many years ago. Now there are so many opportunities for European smart students to create a new company and pursue that journey.
And following on what Eduardo just mentioned, I think as a startup, it's slower to start in Europe because of the fragmented market, also because the regulations are stricter, both in terms of privacy with GDPR and beyond, but also the medical device one. But once you are compliant with the strictest policies, then it's easier to expand because you can basically almost expand anywhere with just some paperwork to do. But then in terms of the processes you have in place, you don't need to change them because they are already compliant with the strictest regulation. And on the other side, another benefits of being born in Switzerland and in Europe in general, but more precisely in Switzerland, is that it's a multilingual context. And so for what we build, which is on voice biomarker, then we have all the data at hand to validate that technology on all these languages and make sure it's also ready for the world.
So bottom line, you have a great technology. There is emerging evidence and kind of full of opportunities in the months and years to come. If you would have kind of a magic wand and you could change parts in policy making, procurement, mindset, openness of society, whatever it is, what are the two, three things that you want to change first to accelerate kind of a meaningful adoption of the technology more broadly in society, at workplace, in doctors' places?
That's the most challenging question of this podcast. I would say the convergence, I think, and the inclusion of the different industries into the well-being, wellness one, I think on my side, it would be the most important factor for accelerating the adoption.
And on my side, I'd say a lot of startups always criticize the regulation and all the processes that are in place. But I feel quite happy how the landscape is. And if you go step by step, in the end, there is a process to navigate to get to the market. And the only thing that is missing is really defined rules on the evaluation of AI models. So for example, on voice, you would have to make sure, and also on large language model, actually, you would have to make sure it generalized across languages before having it authorized in a country where there is this language that is spoken. And that is not something we got really asked about. And, but I mean, then for me, it's not an issue. I mean, we make sure because we want to make sure our technology works. We make sure it works. But I think it would be important to have defined rules. And then on the other side, there are things that we had to do, processes that we had to put in place, which just kind of waste our time because it just doesn't make sense for a pure software solution. So for me, it's really about having rules that are adapted to AI technologies.
So really fascinating. And if some of our listeners are now intrigued by this technology and might ask themselves, how can I actually kind of check up myself? Is there any chance of doing this? Can you share on how to best approach the technology and get a diagnosis ourselves?
Absolutely. As I mentioned before, our vision and dream is to make it to the large public. It's not the case yet, but we have one possibility to test it, which is our web app. You can go to app.virtuosis.ai, and we have the well-being tool, which can be tested there. And we are very happy to receive any feedback from the audience.
And with that, it is a wrap on a truly, truly fascinating conversation. Huge thanks to both of you for sharing your vision, your science, but also your passion for building that technology that genuinely serves people. So big thanks for that.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I personally wish you all the very best, of course, and to all our listeners, thank you for joining us on this episode of the Strategy and Insight podcast. As always, we truly welcome your thoughts and feedback and do encourage you to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Stay tuned for what's coming next, and until then, take care and stay safe.
Strategy and Strategy Made Real.